All right. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It is August the 30th, 2023. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. Hope it is terrific wherever you are at. It is an August 30th kind of day. Humid, hot, grinding, but I love it. Right. I hate to see summer go, but at the same time, sometimes it's nice to see summer go as well because it is sort of a hot, grindy time of year. But whatever, it's a great day to be alive. Came in, did some work. Had a conversation with someone this morning, very interesting. You know, it isn't hard to, unfortunately, you know, I have conversations with people that remind me of what my life was like prior to getting sober. And I was talking to a person this morning who's, you know, and people are struggling. You know, people are struggling out there on top of the financial problems, but a lot of people have sort of gotten into drinking, right? Drinking is a big thing. And I'm starting to see a lot of, I've been seeing this ad, I don't know what it's for because I haven't watched it long enough to quite figure it out. But it starts off with, what do you think about alcohol? And the guy's like, alcohol's a thief, right? And, you know, there's sort of this movement. I don't know if it's just sort of on YouTube or on social media, but there is a little movement about trying to help people get off booze. But one of the things I didn't particularly care about the ad was is that, you know, it's like alcohol's a thief, right? It's alcohol's fault. I think it's a bad foot to start off on, right? To be blaming alcohol. And I was having a conversation with somebody this morning and they were talking about their, you know, families are struggling and their son-in-law and daughter moved back in. And unfortunately and thankfully, and, you know, he was in the military and, you know, thank you for your service. But, you know, a lot of stuff happened to him. And when he came back, you know, he's struggling and he's doing a lot of drinking. But she had 100 reasons why he should, right? Because of the war and, you know, different things happening. And I guess that's a good reason to drink, right? I mean, I'm just saying that. There's never, to me, a good reason to drink. But just trying, you know, to be in that position where you're when someone that you love very much is struggling and you can't, it's hard to draw the line in the sand, right? It's hard to put your foot down. It's hard to say, you know, starting now, this has to happen and this has to happen, right? Because it's so much, it's taken so long. You know, like they say, however long it takes to get into the forest is however long it takes to get out of the forest, right? And a lot of these family situations, I know for me as an example, it didn't happen overnight. It was one day at a time to get to that point. And to come out of that point and to fix it all, it takes a while. But eventually, at some point, you have to put your freaking a line in the sand, right? And you feel guilty, right? This lady's like, I feel bad. You know, I don't want him. You know, because what's the solution, right? Listen, if this is what you're going to do, get out of my house, right? But they have kids, and it's their daughter, and it's their family, and you stick by family. And so it's really a tough situation. And, you know, my suggestion is just like, hey, do what you're going to do, but starting now, the rule is there's no alcohol drinking in the house, right? I think that's a simple rule. I think it allows the person that's doing it to break it, right? This isn't because, unfortunately, I know when I was in my disease, it was everybody else's fault, right? I wouldn't be this way if you hadn't thrown me out, right? I wouldn't be this way if you hadn't put these rules in place. My dad's solution was get out of the house. I'll pay your rent. I don't want you here. And that worked for a while, thank God, because eventually I was able to find sobriety and start to take care of myself. And same with my brother. My brother, you know, he's doing great, but, you know, he still struggles a bit. And, but there are people that literally have people living in their house that are active alcoholics and they can't figure out, they're at an impasse, right? The person doesn't want to get better. They don't want to throw them out. And it just sort of exists like this. And it's tough, right? And so I was like, well, listen, just say, hey, no drinking in the house. Unfortunately, that rule will probably get broken, and then you're at the same point you were before where you really have to give an ultimatum, which is, listen, you either are going to follow these rules or you're going to make the choice, right? Because it is a choice. Like I've said before, and I told the lady, I go, the biggest challenge really is just being accountable, right? Because I blamed everybody. It was always everybody else's fault. And so to give someone an ultimatum saying, listen, we love having you here, right? But if you're going to live here, you can't drink here. And more than likely, right, that's usually what pushes us down the road to going even farther down, right? And because I don't think I've ever had an ultimatum where I was like, well, okay, let me stop doing what I'm doing, right? I'm just going to continue what I'm doing, and hopefully the shit doesn't hit the fan too bad. Eventually it does, and eventually we have to finally address our problem. Self-deprecate, self-help books on the shelf. Help meditate hard on myself. Friends can't relate. Time is your friend, can't reciprocate. Time's up, come on. Now I'm trapped in the grass, not gonna laugh, not gonna go home. Not ready for the crash, heavy body frozen. Hand on my wrist, hand on my cold shoulders. Skies open up, I think I got a little older. 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 Is unfortunate, right? I think in my journey, I think about the journey. If I'm going to think about the journey, I'm going to think about the whole journey. And I remember, you know, having these ultimatums with my parents, but they unfortunately took place very young, right? And my dad said, listen, you're either going to do this or these are going to be your consequences. I chose to take the consequences, right? But that, you know, I had an opportunity to get sober early on, and I hadn't done that much damage, right? I was heading down a path of a lot of damage, but at the time, I hadn't done too much damage. I was still in high school. I was still, you know, in my classes, right? I had that opportunity, and I chose not to take it, right? And so I needed to go down farther. And, you know, eventually the big one for me as a teenager was being grounded, right? And having things taken away, like the car and my freedom was one my parents definitely didn't mind taking away. And so it was just, but I had the opportunity, right? And so I would continue to do what I did, and my parents would sort of handle it, right? At that time I was younger than 18, so I sort of was stuck, they were stuck with me, right? But, you know, I had opportunities to jump off this fucking train before it hit the freaking mountain, and I didn't. And you just keep going, and more opportunities would come up, and I, you know, take off ramps, like going to rehabs. You know, I went to New Life, and I went to that rehab in Southern California, and these were all just opportunities to take the heat off, right? But I had no desire to get off that train yet, and it's still barreling down the mountain, right? And you know, going living in California and getting into the other drugs that I was doing. And at that point, my parents were like, we can't really get you sober. We can't do anything. So all we can do is just help you live, and hopefully you figure it out, right? And so I spent a chunk of time in California just being a wastezoid, right? Doing nothing, but my parents still helping me with my rent, you know, still letting me survive, but not quite under their umbrella. And, you know, I did that for a while, then finally, you know, got arrested and went to jail, and you think that would be the point, right? That's the moment. How low do you have to go, right? And that low point, I remember getting arrested and waiting to go to court and using the whole time, seriously not giving a shit what the consequences were going to be. And, you know, eventually going to jail, right, and that Camp West Fork, and you know, thinking, okay, finally, I've finally hit the bottom, right? And convincing myself, you're done, you are going to be sober, good job, and then coming out of that, out of jail and getting high that day, right? Still not far enough down, right? Loading up all my shit, moving across the country, living in this one-bedroom apartment, right? Just the bottom of the barrel, right? And finally, that moment in March 31st, 1997, where it just gave me an opportunity, right? I don't know if I wanted to get sober. I'm not really, I don't think I really did. Sobriety wasn't as big of a concern. What people thought about me was more of a concern. And that's, I think, what directed me to my first attempt in 97 was to, you know, wasn't about getting sober. It was about, you know, not facing all the people that I worked with a black eye and stitches, right? I was more embarrassed what my peers would think than what God was thinking, right? Because at this point, you know, the only one that's really judging me is God. And I didn't care about that either. So, you know, it just keeps going, right? And then finally getting sober and having a taste, right? Having a taste of it and getting that head full of AA and doing that for a while, but still eventually drinking again, right? Still not low enough, not far enough down. Many opportunities to stop the pain, and I chose not to. And I rode it all the way down. And then my first wife leaving, taking our child, empty house. The disease finally had me. And what finally had to happen? I had to choose sobriety, right? All my life, somebody else had been trying to choose it for me, and it just didn't work. And thank you. I appreciate the help. I was sick. I was I wasn't the same Tom I am today, right? I mean, there's parts of me. There's devils and, you know, angels and shit that still bounce around in there. But, you know, hopefully I'm not that same person today. And but, you know, it was a decision that I had to make, right? But I had to lose everything. And listen, the story isn't over, right? We're just one day at a time. It could go lower, right? I hope not. I hope that I've finally stepped off the train before it plows completely into a mountain, right? And but when I talk to people, like I was talking to this person this morning about this situation, it is tough because you don't want to be the person that's creating, because alcoholics have a nice way. I know I used to have a nice way of making it everybody else's fault. This wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for you doing that, right? This is because, you know, when you kicked me out of the house, that's why I'm struggling, right? It's always somebody else's fault. And like I told this person this morning, most people like us don't have accountability, right? They're victims. And it sounds like that this what this person's going through. And it's really tough because, you know, you don't want to throw your family out of the house, especially an adult who's really the father of your grandkids, right? But at the same time, you know, you're scratching your head like, how did I get to this point? So it's just really tough. You know, my advice is always, you know, put the rule in place. No drinking in the house. Take it or leave it. At that point, when they choose to drink, they've decided to leave the house, right? I remember my one buddy says, I didn't give my house away. I know exactly where it's at. I didn't lose my house. No, I know exactly where it's at. I gave it away, right? And that's what we do. We give our life away. We trade it away. You know, you trade having, you know, a family, right? That's what I did. I chose having a family and a newborn child. I chose alcohol, right? We try to choose both. We try to blend them, right? But they don't put up with that shit. And so I chose drinking. I can't say, well, if it wasn't for my wife leaving, my life would have been better. No, she left because I made the choice. I gave her the green light to go. What else do you want? That's my fault. Right. And so when you put rules in place and they choose to break them, they've chosen to leave. It's their choice. Of course, you know, like I used to do, I couldn't see that. Right. I couldn't see that till I finally got sober. But it's always somebody else's fault. And it's very tough. It's very tough. So, and it's hard because I've been fucked up by this damn disease for a long time. And I know how it is. And it's, the frosting's off the cake, right? The gravy's out of it. This is the bare bones shit. This is exactly what the issue is. Self-centered asshole, deficiency in humility. Put rules in place. If they decide to break the rules, throw them out. right? It's like my brother. It's like me, you know, my dad, my brother, having to deal with my brother. And my dad finally said, that's it. I'm done. And my brother walked off and is got his life together because my brother finally said, oh, I don't have really many options. It looks like it's finally at the point, right? And it's rough. And I'm so grateful my brother's sober today. And I'm so, like I told this lady today, I said, you know, I'm so grateful that I get to be there for my dad because we were such a pain in the ass. And we made my dad make fucked up decisions. You know, I have kids. I don't want to ground them. I've never grounded my kids. I feel so bad. He grounded us, man. He stood by his decisions. Nobody wants to do that. And we created a lifestyle. We created an environment where he had to. And I'm just so grateful that we can give back. And he said this, you know, he said it to me again the other day. I still can't believe you're taking care of me. Right? I told the lady, man, we have to start falling in love with being sober more than we're afraid of drinking. And that's what I had to do. You know, that's why I try to take on life, right? Take it on. Because I can tell you, all the things I do today wouldn't be happening if I was drinking and using drugs today. You know, because I'll have these moments. You know, I've shared before, I was into the upper stuff. You know, I think sometimes I go, what would happen, man, if I snorted a line of crank in this world? I mean, 100,000 sirens would go off, right? Because I have my lifestyle. And it, you know, staying up all night, all of a sudden cleaning the garage, doing all sorts of crazy shit that I used to do on that stuff. Some red flags would start flying, right? My world would come crashing down very quickly. But I think about that today, right? But I've also had a time with a good life. I've also have some sobriety time. I've also seen how if you do put down the drugs and alcohol and you try to work some sort of program, right? Try to get honest. Life gets better. It's better than our wildest dreams, right? And it's crazy. It's crazy. I went to the meeting this week. It was on the fifth step. To me, that is the pivotal moment, right? The fifth step is the challenging step, right? People always talk about the fourth step, the moral inventory, which we need, right? When I came into the program, I had no morals, right? I had to start addressing them. I had to light each one of these situations up and understand what I did and why I did it. And then when you do that fifth step, you have to kind of divulge it all, right? And unfortunately, there's probably a few things in there that are very embarrassing, right? But a lot of these weird, embarrassing things were made by kid brains, right? Like some of the most embarrassing things are like things that happened to me probably before I turned 11, right? 11, 12, when you start experimenting with things and it's embarrassing and you know, all that weird shit, everybody goes through it, right? But there's some shame that goes along with it. And when you have to sit down and share it all, and I've shared the story about when I did my first fifth step with Mike R. I sat down and I wasn't embarrassed. Didn't bother me one bit. But I also didn't tell everything, right? I'm like, and it even says, men with many years, people, I should say, folks, humans with many years of sobriety still struggle to stay sober when they haven't completed the fifth step correctly. And I get it, right? Because it's just one of those rocks that we carry, you know? This is just something we carry around with us. And even though it's not a life-changing event, it's something that you can check off that list. And so when I did my first fifth step, it wasn't a big deal because I did not tell everything. And believe me, what I did finally eventually tell wasn't the end of the world, right? But it was something that was blocking me from holding the hand of God, right? If me and self are involved in making a decision, there's no God in that decision, right? It's based on self. What am I worried? People are going to think I'm weird. People think I'm, you know, how embarrassing, all the shame, right? And so when I did the first fifth step and didn't tell everything, I'm not going to say that's why I drank. Don't know. But I definitely drank after 5 years. And so when I came back and sat down and wanted to do the fifth step, a real fifth step, and divulge all those darkest little stupid secrets that we carry around that we're so ashamed of, I couldn't even do it with my new sponsor. You know, Matt was my sponsor at the time. I had to call my first sponsor, Mike R., and go back and finish the fifth step with him that I couldn't do the first time. Like, I almost have levels of embarrassment, right? And certain people, like, well, I definitely can't talk about this with Matt. But maybe I can go talk about it with Mike. And that's what I did. And I called him. I said, I want to come do my fifth step with you. And he said, all right. I sat down. I read it all. The warts. All of it. And he was like, okay. Now you can burn it. And I burned it. And that was it. You know, it talks about in the first paragraph of the first step, this is where we first start hearing about sober and peace of mind. I've said this before. Sobriety and peace of mind. Let me see. I have a 12 and 12 here. Let me read the beginning of that because it says it. Step 5. It says right here. Step 5. Admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Right? And it says all of AA's 12 steps ask to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than 5, but scarcely any step is more necessary to long-term sobriety and peace of mind than this one. I don't think it mentions that any time before this, right? This tells me there's more to just not drinking, right? This tells me that a lot of the shit that I carry that my self, ego, devil tells me not to talk about, to keep secret, is keeping me sick. You know, I can be perfectly sober. I can be, you know, perfectly in tune, right? Relationship with God. And something can happen to me and it throws everything out the window. Everything out the window. And I completely lose my shit. Like I can't, I'm just hyper-focused on it all of a sudden and how annoying that is to me. And it just brings all the devil right out of me. And, you know, I have to pray about those things today, but I'm not impervious to these weird things that show up in my life that really get my boat a rocking. Right. And so we're never, it's one, that's why we deal with this program one day at a time, because the shit just comes at us when we're least expecting it. You know, the latest one was I did this event, right? And during the event, we took some pictures and Buddy and I were wearing hats and we just threw our hats down and took pictures and then we posted them. And because we went swimming, right? We finished doing what we were doing, put our hats. My God, stop. We just stopped what we were doing, went swimming, threw our hats down, and I took pictures of it because I just thought it was kind of a candid moment. Posted them on my Facebook page, and then this guy's like, take down those pictures. We do not promote other businesses through this site. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, right? I'm just taking a picture of my hat, right? And this person's thinking that I'm, you know, teamed up with the owner, the company on the hat, and I'm, you know, trying to build a brand using their brand. And I'm like, oh my God, like I did not even think about this. Had no idea. I have no desire to do that, but it pissed me off because I felt like he was questioning my character, right? And sometimes when that happens, this is like a free play right now because they did it and little do they know that I have character today, right? And so it really fucking pissed me off. And I don't like to be accused of that kind of stuff. But what happens when I'm accused of that kind of stuff? How am I supposed to react? You know, do I have the green light to be defensive, right? Do I have the green light to be a jerk? I don't, right? Because there's two sides to every story. And I know the person that was talking, that brought this issue up to me is a good person. So I know that they must have, you know, for some reason felt like it was one way, right? And so they were pretty committed to how they thought. And I was pretty committed to how I thought. And so, but a conversation happened, and I was really put off by the whole thing, quite honestly. And but luckily, you know, we worked it out, right? But that's sort of the life we're living in now with the internet and Instagram and Facebook, and everybody's trying to promote everybody, and everybody's an influencer, and I'm not into that stuff. I was just trying to capture a cool moment. But at the same time, I also have to respect rules that other people have, right? And even though that's not what was my intention, it's still a real thing for them. So I have to still put my feet in their position. And so before I went absolutely, you know, crazy because I was right and they were clearly wrong, right? I had to find some humility, right? And just explain, I wouldn't do that, right? I am, that's not my intentions, right? I have no desire to do something like that. And the person's like, well, listen, if that's the case, I apologize. And we're good, right? We handled it, but it was eating me up a little bit, right? There are parts, you know, I wish that when something like that happened today, I'd be like, no big deal. You know, I could just go to this spot and things like that wouldn't bother me. You know, put a glass of vodka, a nice glass of vodka in front of me. I have no desire, right? You know, let me allow me to do something and not tell somebody. I'm perfectly fine by that. I don't need to, you know, that doesn't need to be important to me. But question me on something? Ooh, I get very defensive. My dad told me that this happened the other night, and he sort of, you know, because my dad still likes to talk about the past, and I get annoyed because I felt like I've worked hard to get to this point. And he still kind of puts me under the umbrella of old Tom, which it makes me mad. I can't just, I mean, how do people handle that? Like, oh, I remember as a kid, why are you so defensive, right? Why are you so defensive, man? If nothing's wrong, why are you so defensive? And I'd be like, I'm not defensive, right? But at some point, I have to defend myself. Is that you know, serenity, right? You just don't have to, it's not important. If someone says, hey, or accuses you of doing something, you're so serene, you're like, hey, man, no big deal. That's what you think. I haven't gotten there. I'm still defensive. And my dad called me out on it the other night. I felt defensive the other day when I sort of got called out on this. And I don't want to be. But at the same time, I don't know how. How do you defend yourself and not be defensive? I'm not sure that, I'm not sure it's possible, right? I definitely know what it's like to live a life where you're not doing anything wrong and people will say something and I'm not defensive, right? I'm just like, whatever, right? I know the life I live. You know, maybe, yeah, I don't know. It's something, you know, I guess over time, I guess if I keep talking about it, keep sharing about it, keep telling on myself that I'm sometimes an absolute baby, maybe I'll get better, but I don't know. But yeah, if you're doing the fifth step, do the fifth step. Do a great fifth step. Find somebody, divulge all the information, get it out, all of it, right? It's so important. It will help in the end. And I don't know why, right? If it's even just the fact that you did it, right? It's just something that we've done. Because whatever the decision that keeps us from doing it, probably not people we want to be hanging out with, right? So, let's see, daily reflection today. I don't know. Not a lot's going on today. That was an interesting conversation I had with that person this morning. The fifth step is fantastic. It's personal, though, right? We work until the pain stops, right? And the first time I did the fifth step was just doing the fifth step, just going through it, right? Didn't have to be complete for me. Just, you know, I wanted to say that I had at least done the fifth step. Then it became, how well did I do it, right? So I guess I had levels of goals. And finally, the final goal was, I want to sit down and I want to say this stuff out loud to another human being and be free of it. And I found it to be very helpful. So the only requirement, August 30th. At one time, every AA group had many membership rules. Everybody was scared, witless, that something or somebody would capsize the boat. The total list was a mile long. If all those rules had been in effect everywhere, nobody could have possibly joined AA at all, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. I'm grateful that the third tradition only requires me a desire to stop drinking. I had been breaking promises for years. In the fellowship, I didn't have to make promises. I didn't have to concentrate. It only required me to attending one meeting in a foggy condition to know I was home. I didn't have to pledge undying love. Here, strangers hugged me. It gets better. They said, one day at a time, you can do it. There were no longer strangers, but caring friends. I asked God to help me to reach out to people desiring sobriety and to please keep me grateful. Yeah. It's that moment, really, where you start falling in love with being sober and less afraid of drinking. That's a great place to be. And but yeah, I hope everyone's having a great day. I'm going to go. I got some stuff to do. I'll be at a meeting tonight. Should be great. And we'll catch you later.
Snow in the snowbanks, no thanks. Time's up, come on now. I'm on my side.